This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
In front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. MALLIARD.com. One more thing before we start. Let me turn it over to my friend that you may know from Ancient Aliens and the Curse of Oak Island and many other things, Robert Clotworthy.
On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group. On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group.
I want to welcome everybody in tonight. My guest tonight is Neil Lachman. He is the self-described disruptor of the space industry. Neil is the principal founder of Titans Universe, which he has envisioned as a consolidator, builder, and development of unique and disruptive projects while creating incredible value for humanity. Neil has more than 33 years of business experience, including 27 years of investing, finance, telecom, and technology. He's currently serving as the CEO of Titan Space Industry. Welcome, Neil, to the report. Neil, how are you doing tonight?
Thank you, Jim. I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, first and foremost, happy belated birthday. Yesterday was your birthday.
Thank you.
I did light a candle, but I don't want you to blow it out, so there's that. That's unrelated. So you're in beautiful Bosnia, so it's really early there, right? 3 a.m., I think you told me. So thank you for making some time for me. Of course, you were telling me you don't normally sleep at this time of day anyway, so you're roaring to go.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And so the other thing you posted this on Twitter the other day, yesterday. This is your first media since 2016, so why the Mallard Report?
Yeah, first of all, because I like you.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, the thing is, your audience is totally different from what I would pursue usually, right? So basically it would be technology, telecom, media, or space media, right? So when you approached me, I thought, okay, let's do this. And also because you had in your description that you interview thought leaders, and I think we are thought leaders in what we're doing. So quite a good fit after all.
Yeah, I was going to say, you definitely are, because as we were just talking a little bit, I try to cover a wide range of things, but it's hard to kind of put that in words at times. So let's back up a little bit. What got you? I'm assuming that you were a little boy, always fascinated in space, but tell me I'm wrong.
So I was born into a Hindu family. And I don't know what you know about Hinduism, but we believe in a lot in metaphysics, right? But everything is about astrology, astronomy. So, I'm 52 since yesterday, so I don't really believe in too much organized religion kind of stuff, but I'm still quite spiritual. But in Hinduism, everything revolves around astrology and astronomy. So, for example, I was born in the whatever you call it, ascendant of Saturn, right? So that comes from your birth. So, if not fascinated, I was just drawn into space-related stuff from birth as a born Hindu. So that's one thing. And second, of course, you know, you see so many great TV series, you see so many great movies, and of course you'll be drawn to space. But yeah, specifically that I wanted to do something in space, not really. I'm kind of an opportunist. I'm an investor, and to say that I was always going to do this, and so no, that would be a lie. I'm doing this because there's a lot of money in it, and because we're going to do something good for humanity and for Earth. So yeah, that's my long answer.
Now, I thought they were long enough because we're going to dive more into it. There's a lot of opportunity in space, obviously, because it's the last frontier. But how do you?
Yeah,
I guess the I don't want to say this way, but I'm going to say it this way. I mean, you say there's a lot of opportunity. Yes, there's a lot of opportunity, but how do you make money back from it? Because there's no tourist industry, so to speak, yet. Or right. So I'm sitting here, you know, putting this show together, and I'm thinking, yeah, I get there's an opportunity there, but there's I don't see the return, I guess, is my point.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's, of course, at the core of our whole space industry's business. You know, you're not doing it for charity, because there is no charity involved in it. You have to do it because it has an economic incentive. Now, I don't know how long I can go on with this, so you can interject and interrupt whenever you want, okay. But I'm going to go on a kind of long answer here. So, first of all, Neil deGrasse Tyson said the first trillionaire will come from asteroid mining. And he is quite right. Only we differ in the spot. We're saying asteroid mining is not really necessary unless you want something specific to the asteroid belt. But let's make life easier and let's mine the moon. So yes, the first trillionaire will come from space, but not from asteroid mining, as Neil deGrasse Tyson says. It will come from mining, but most likely, as we think and we model toward, is from moon mining. So there's a huge economic incentive, but you have to believe in it first, of course. But it's not just you and me or my team saying, okay, let's do business in space. Those models have existed since 50, 60 years. Now, Dr. Gerard O'Neill, the Princeton professor, known for his O'Neill cylinders, you know, rotating habitats, he had this vision of, you know, taking industry, heavy industry from Earth to the moon and in space. So that's where we have to go. That vision is not mine. That vision is his and certain others before him, most likely. But the question is then, okay, you can have any idea, you know, but how will you execute it? And that's where my team comes in place. My team and I, we are number crunching assholes. We're not visionaries. We're not space enthusiasts, you know, like, okay, let's do something wow. No, we are number crunching, spreadsheet reading assholes. If something doesn't make sense, we won't go for it. My team and I have decided, you know, because we see the enormous potential, economy-wise, climate-wise, industry-wise, and of course in the economy, economic incentive, there is a lot of worlds, which includes space tourism. So there's a huge, huge business opportunity there.
So now, I do want to interrupt you here. Because so the first
version
of going to the space is for B2B, for business to go out and mine, and then you're going to talk about getting into tourism. Just to make sure I'm
kind of no, no. So okay, let me rewind.
Yeah.
This is madness. Space business is madness. But with a bunch of smart people like my team, I have a very powerful team, very smart people, including people who, you know, have raised billions of dollars, private equity, venture capital, you know. We have an amazing team. But this madness of space business and space industries, you know, what we like to say with whatever we do, there is a method behind the madness. And I can explain you the method in detail, you know, although I don't do it often because we don't really need to. But yes, there is a method behind the madness. So yes, we're talking about moon mining, which is crazy, of course. And it's going to take, you know, 15, 20 years before we establish that in a large scale, on a large scale. But we begin here on Earth, you know, with a really silly space tourism business. So we start very small with something totally unrelated to moon mining. So we have the method that we say, okay, let's build this. Let's do this. You know, it is about space tourism. Well, near space, because at stratosphere, including crazy thing like space diving, and floating.
I've got to interrupt you again. Space diving. It's like skydiving on steroids, which I don't understand skydiving. Sorry, continue.
Like skydiving, but then from 30 kilometers altitude, like Felix Baumgartner did with the Red Bull Stratos project 12 years ago.
Yeah, which blows my mind. Okay, wait, we're at a key point, because we did kind of talk about conspiracy when we were just talking a few minutes ago before the show. So let's dive off into the first conspiracy here for just a minute.
Sure.
This is a yes or no question. And you're going to answer it, and we're going to put this to bed around here once and for all. Is the Earth flat?
Okay. The short answer is no, the Earth is round. And, of course, I know your audience will not like my answer there.
Because, well, most of my audience will, but there's a small fraction of people out there who think it's flat. So that's why I'm asking.
Well, I'm going to tell you why I think. And then you guys can decide what you think. And of course, you have known this before me, but I'm going to just say it. So you can see with your own eyes the entire universe through a telescope. And you'll see that all the planets and the moons are what?
Round.
They are not flat. They are round. So there is one thing. Everything is round except Earth. That's kind of very unique, right? So let's put that as exhibit number one. Exhibit number two is we have, since the last 60, 70 years, we have photographic evidence that the Earth is round. Well, spherical, right? So, you know, you can say, oh, that's fake, but it's not fake. In the next few years, like in 5 years, I'm going to take you to 30 kilometers height, right, Jim? I'll take you on my tab. You won't have to pay for it.
Okay.
But, you know, you'll be able to see that it is spherical. So that's exhibit number two. Exhibit number three is with, for example, lunar eclipses. You know, you will not see a disk shadow on the moon. You'll see a circular shadow on the moon. you'll see a circular shadow on the moon, eclipsing the moon, I'm saying. So that's three. Fourth is, and I'm just saying this on from the top of my mind, okay? So, but the fourth is that you'll happen when you are at sea, when you on the beach, and you'll see a boat going towards the horizon, you will see that at one point it will disappear. There is no other explanation than there is an, you know, an horizon that you cannot see from your point of view, but that ship doesn't cease to exist because it will arrive at one time somewhere, right? And you can communicate with it almost a real time. That ship will not fall off the surface of the Earth at no point in its journey, even if it goes all the way and comes back over land through oceans to that same spot. It will not disappear. It will make a round a trip, literally, around the world. So there are so many reasons to believe that the Earth is round, well, spherical.
Okay, so now the next fun conspiracy. I told you we're going to have some fun tonight. You ready? Okay. I'm sure you're ready for this one. The moon landing was a hoax. So you want to go mine somewhere that is... You want to go mine cheese.
It's a hoax. So, first of all, I wrote an analysis on rockets, right? Because, anyway, that's maybe for later. So I wrote an analysis on... a critical analysis of rocket launch systems. And in it, in the first few paragraphs, I explain and I put a source to it that, of course, there are people who believe that the moon landing is fake. But I think it was Discovery that did a six-part series on it. So they took all the conspiracy theory major points, and they didn't outright dismiss it, so they went to research it in depth, even doing setups, and even showing from camera standpoint, reflection standpoint, making a replica of the lunar landing module, and so on. And the conclusion was, no, the moon landing could not have been faked. Not in a Hollywood studio, not with photography, everything. So they did that six-part series on Discovery. If you want, I'll give you a link to the series.
So I mentioned to you earlier that I've been doing these ad reads. I should have did this one earlier, but we're going to get to it now. Let's get after it, duckpondshop.com. Let's get after it, duckpondshop.com. Okay, so let's truly get after this. So you want to go to space? You guys have been working at this for a while now. So what's the timeline going forward? Because I'm sure you're getting close to kind of, how do I say this nicely, getting off the ground. That's the dad joke in me coming out. I apologize right now for it.
So we have a different approach to space travel than Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or NASA or ULA or whoever. Right, that's why they don't really like me, because I'm not one of them. No, we are not one of them. We are saying what you're promising is basically bullshit for long term. And I can explain to you in detail why, but okay, that's another thing. So we're saying first things first, because of course, indeed, you need to finance this whole thing, right? How the hell are you going to finance billions worth of research and development, investments in vehicles, and so on, let alone tens of billions, heck, let alone hundreds of billions. So how will you do that? Elon Musk cannot finance it. Jeff Bezos cannot finance it. They can finance a little bit, but not entirely. And how and what? So that's what we say. We specialize in business models. We specialize in making sense of all kinds of nonsense. We make, you know, we create a method behind the madness. So we like crazy projects. We think we are black swan event investors. And I can't explain to you in detail, but let's keep it simple for now. We're saying, okay, in order to go to the moon and mine it in 15, 20 years onward, we have to first create infrastructure. We call that orbital infrastructure. You can find it on our website, right? Everything that I'm saying is almost available on the website, except with you, I'm going into a bit more detail. So we're saying, okay, let's go from now, 2020 to the 2023 onward. Indeed, what's the timeline? But we're saying, okay, first of all, you need to create a vehicle that will be your workhorse, right? So now, today, if you want to put something in orbit, let alone to the moon, you'll need a rocket. Right? So rockets are our only ways to put stuff up in space. Of course, there are a few other projects now, like Spin Launch, which I really like if they can do it. But that's very small, small stuff, right? It's not tons. It's not 10 tons or 100 tons, you know, let alone more, megatons. So we're saying, hey, we have to create a vehicle that is going to be able to help us create infrastructure up in space. And what kind of infrastructure, I'll tell you in a bit. But what is that workhorse? Cannot be rockets, because if it explodes one day, and one day it will, which is the problem with rockets, then your whole stuff is gonna be grounded, just like the government has grounded Blue Origin for now, you know, New Glenn. So anyway, I think New Shepard. So we say, hey, you know what? Let's go back in history, which is what we all do, by the way, Jim. Whatever we are doing is not new, most likely. It's all part of old plans that we have went back to, and we have decided, hey, that's interesting. Let's pick that. Let's pick that. And let's pick that. So we are not really the visionaries behind everything, what I just said earlier. We just take the most amazing plans which haven't been executed because of various reasons. And one of them is related to a plan of 50 years ago to create a constellation of space solar power satellites. And they thought of a space plane, which was called the Starraker. Now, there's a whole story behind that, of course, but the Starraker was an amazing space plane planned by the guys who also built the space shuttle later. And they didn't do it because, you know, they chose for other technologies, which eventually became the space shuttle. But we're saying, hey, let's take that Star Raker, which is a 50-year-old concept, and let's modernize it in terms of design, in terms of material, in terms of engineering, in terms of technology, in terms of automation, in terms of computation. Everything that we have 50 years later is going to make life easier. Now, that's a crazy thing, but it's crucial. So we're saying, let's push this plan of a space plane. Now, the entire aerospace industry wants a space plane to happen, but they don't know how. And there are other space plane plans like Sierra Nevada's Space Dream Chaser and others like Helios and so. But we are saying, you know, we don't care what they're doing. What we are going to do is we're going to copy the Star Raker and modernize it. And trust me, that's the way to go. And that's your workhorse. And it's not my plan. It's not new. It is a plan that was devised for a similar kind of infrastructure plan 50, 60 years ago. So you can then build your orbital infrastructure. Now, in order to build your orbital infrastructure, you also have to reach it without the space plane every time. So once you build it, you need to reach it. That's what you will do with a space elevator. Now, the space elevator is also not my idea or my team's. It's a very old idea. NASA went after it. There is a whole International Society of Space Elevator and so on. Very learned people, very distinguished groups. But they are approaching it from a different angle. They're saying, okay, let's put a space elevator from Earth's surface somewhere in the ocean and then reach up all the way to geostationary, which is 40,000 plus kilometers up. And we're saying, not necessary. Let's build a space elevator. Yes, we'll call it a space elevator, but it's not going to be 40,000 kilometers. It's just going to be 100 kilometers, 100 kilometers. So we say, okay, let's do these crazy things, but let's do it as simple and simplified as possible. So the space elevator will reach 100 kilometers, not 40,000 kilometers, connect with what we call orbital infrastructure, orbital rings. Orbital rings are the future of space travel. Not space elevators, not rockets, orbital rings.
Well. So I've got to stop.
Now you may want to.
I've got to stop you for just a few minutes because I've got to point out a few things for my English speaking
American
audience. 100 kilometers is about 62 miles. So, I mean, that's
exactly.
I mean, that's quite a woo, when you put that in perspective. I mean, I had to quickly Google that because I was trying to count fingers and I'd rather accurate report facts.
Yeah.
And I told you before the show, and I'm going to do it now, and I'm going to make the point just because the guy who does my show notes, Chris, I love him. But he told me I didn't have the stones to ask you this question, but I'm going to do it because I'm fascinated because I want your honest answer. What kind of music do you play on a space elevator?
The crazy thing is, you think it's an elevator. It's not. We call it a space elevator because the industry calls it. I want to call it a vertical jumbo jet. So you will not be in an elevator. By the way, if you go to our website, check out the space elevator section. Of course, check out the rest, but you'll love the drawings. And it's inspired by other artists, but our artists made our versions. And you will see the cabins that we'll use. Those are huge cabins. They are like vertical jumbo jets. So it's not you and three, four people. No, there will be 100 plus people on that in several layers. So it's going to be your music, your DVDs, or media that you want to have.
That's just unacceptable. That's just unacceptable. We need a direct answer to what kind of music we're playing on this. No.
Whatever you want, because you'll have your own personal, like when you go on a first class flight. That's this.
Okay.
So it's not different.
So over 62 miles. I mean, I can assume that it's going to be pretty quick then.
Yeah, between 3 and 4 hours, depending on because of course such structure has never been built. To put in perspective, the other guys. With all due respect, because I really respect them, but they want to build something that's 40,000 kilometers, right? That's how many miles? That's crazy.
Hold on, we'll get there. Hold on, give me 1 second. I've got that still open. 25,000 miles. We'll round it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah. So, first of all, they don't have the material with the tensile strength to do that. But they hope so in the next, kind of years. But, that's not necessary. And I have more this kind of examples. But anyway, depending on the technology, because it will be magnetic levitation, you could go fast. But the most fastest that you want to go in terms of comfort, which should be comparable to space flight, airplane flight, is that we're going to go most likely 20 miles per hour max. So most likely between 15 and 20 miles per hour. So yeah, between 3 to 4 hours up, and then again, after a while, you'll go down with the same speed.
Okay. Oh, before I forget, I found you on Twitter, which is a great way to connect with you. I mean, you're fun. You're tweeting all kinds of stuff. But where can people yeah. find you and the websites? Because we've kind of batted them around, but I don't think we've mentioned them yet. So let's get all that out there before I get out of control.
Okay. Let me plug that. So the website is Titans SI. So Titans as in the word, Titans, and then SI for Space Industries, TitansSI.com.
And you're, what is it, Neil X1, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that Neil X1 is my current, because I had my business account, which was Neil Lachman, but I am locked out of it. So Neil X1 is my current one. And yeah, I do a lot of, I used to write a lot about fascism, political hatred, philosophy, psychology, I did my diploma in cognitive behavioral therapy and so on. So yeah, I do a mix of tweeting and I'll follow back whoever follows me.
Make sure you tell them that you came from here, because that gets you a gold star for me. I don't know what it gets from
yeah,
him.
Yeah, indeed.
So Germantown Runner is asking about Pluto, so let's go into deep space now for a minute. Is it still, I mean, I know it was a planet and then it kind of lost its planet status. And there are some people trying to bring it back. What about you? Where are you on this whole?
I would love Pluto to be a planet again. So there are technicalities, and there are maybe some facts that would make it not a planet in the technical word. But I think it should be. And if I remember correctly, Pluto is still part of the planets in what I was saying in the beginning in Hindu astronomy. So, yeah.
So it needs to come back.
Bring Pluto back.
You heard it here first. We demand a recount and adjustment of what makes a planet. Now, okay.
Yeah.
So we're talking about going to Mars. We haven't got to Mars. We've been to the moon. But I want to know about what are we going to do about all? I mean, you're talking about mining the moon. What about all the space junk? Could somebody? I hate to say this, but could somebody go up there and collect all these old satellites and make some money doing that?
Nah, I don't think so. Yeah, first of all, in order to make money on it, you have to have one huge industry that can use that as recycled material. It's not non-existent as of yet. So for the next 20, 30 years, I don't think so. Whatever after that, I don't know. Maybe. But we need to clean up those that we think would be in our way. Now, the Kessler syndrome says, okay, it's going to get worse. But on the other hand, you know, for space debris, yes, I think there's a huge business opportunity for space debris cleaning, but the technologies to do that, you know, it's not easy, and it's gonna that they are doing tests now, by the way, and but you know, I'm not very impressed, to be honest, with the tests that are being done these days. A lot of companies are going bankrupt while doing the things, you know, which I learned over my, 30 plus years career. Nothing is what it seems. But anyway, space debris, yeah, I want us to be involved in space debris too. Not because of the money that we want to make with it, because that's almost it's nothing on the scale that we are talking about with doing my our projects. But because we need the space to be clean, but you will have debris for always. You'll always have that risk. So you have the risk of space debris, but that risk of being hit by space debris is very, very little, you know? So even though, yes, it is a problem, and the Kessler syndrome will make it even worse, even then, the likelihood of being hit by space debris, you know, will be, you know, very small. Now, what is worse than space debris, you know, is non-human-made space debris, right? That will hit you from anywhere, and you cannot clean that up. You don't know where it comes from. So there will always be a risk in space travel, space debris or not.
Well, wait.
Now, of course,
I've got to throw this one at you. Are aliens throwing stuff at us, or are you just talking about asteroids?
No. I'm talking about asteroids. I'm talking about real space debris. Not human-made or alien-made.
I had to. You knew it was coming at some point.
I was
hopeful that you were going to tell me there's a little gray man out there throwing stuff at us.
No, they are not. Most likely not.
Take your junk back.
Yeah. We should hit them back with their own junk.
That would be just... That'd be karma, right? That'd be just too good.
No, I don't believe in aliens.
Not yet, but maybe. Well, you'll be the first. You'll call me first, right? When they change your mind.
When I change my mind, you want to know why I don't believe in it, or shall we move on?
No, you can tell me. That's fine. I believe on the abstract. There's something else out there somewhere, but that's all the more I can give.
So I'm not God, if we have to believe in one God or not, but I'm not God and I'm not perfect, so whatever I'm saying doesn't count at all. But so there was this Fermi paradox, right? Enrico Fermi, and he said this, right? Where are they, right? And... The whole Fermi paradox is kind of genius in its simplicity. And of course, I was describing. He did an equation on it. And they can't figure out. They can't figure out whether what the probability was of Drake equation. That was Drake. The Drake equation tried to calculate the probability of an alien civilization, right? And there are proponents and opponents of the outcome, because you can't really know. So, you know, I've been involved with a lot of pioneering stuff. I don't want to brag too much, but I earned my bragging rights.
I was going to say, you've done well in your life, my friend, so go ahead. Lay it out there.
Thank you. So, you know, for example, in 1999 and officially in 2000, Dr. Barry Leiner became my advisory board member. We're talking about 22, 23 years ago. Dr. Barry Leiner, who was he? He had been the director of ARPA. And one before the internet, there was ARPANET. And he was responsible for bringing the ARPANET from a military application towards a commercial public application. That was this guy, Dr. Barry Leiner. Now, this kind of stuff doesn't happen just like that. Technology. I'm a technologist. I'm proud of it. You know, I'm calling myself an investor because I'm an opportunist, right? But I'm a technologist first and foremost. Technology doesn't happen out of the blue. It doesn't appear suddenly. It evolves one way or the other. Now, models may be revolutionary, right? But, you know, it's very hard to invent stuff or develop stuff. So in order to have the same technological prowess that we have as human beings on planet Earth, and to have something that is superior that we see in the movies and in the series, you know, crazy. They would have to have exponentially more powerful applications and innovations in order to be superior to the human race. And I think that's highly unlikely. Now, there's this series, of course, you know, you guys all know about it, Ancient Aliens. And the only thing that I can sometimes say about it is, indeed. Because I'm talking about Hinduism, right? So I'm not a really believing Hindu at the moment, right? I'm too old for organized religion. But Hindus believe in all kinds of stuff, right? And you would say, well, if that isn't that kind of God, it must have been an alien. That's like that guy always says, you know, in the memes. I'm not saying it's aliens, but it was the aliens, right? It could be. I'm not saying it wasn't, right? But in order to have the internet, for example, what I was started with Dr. Barry Leiner story, in order to have the internet, it had to be a perfect storm of developments, going back even further to the transistor. The invention of the transistor didn't come from an alien or from my uncle or from my father. It came from a technologist, a scientist at Bell Labs, right? It didn't come from an alien spaceship or whatever. So, you know, that's technology, you know, that's the internet. Aerospace, right? Space, airplanes. Before that, there was the non-existent, you know, dream of flying until the Wright brothers. So how then must it have been developed elsewhere? How? Who? So do we believe in parallel universes where the aliens are in another kind of form than us humans, but they have the same kind of developments or superior? I don't believe so. By the way, I believe in the parallel universes, but not elsewhere. You live in your universe, Jim, right now, and I live in mine. That's what I believe in a parallel universe. Because after this conversation, you'll go on with your life, and I'll go on with my life.
Yeah.
But in order to talk about aliens, it has to be a perfect confluence of events, inventions, developments that is most likely, most unlikely. So, yeah, I'm not saying no, but I'm saying most probably there is none. So, and it's, of course, crazy because in such a huge universe, why would we be the only? But then the question can also be, why not?
So let's peel this back a minute, because you mentioned technology and you've kind of beat it around. We've been outer space for a while. But what's you've been around for 30 years. We'll peel that back a little bit, too, just for the sake of making us feel young for a minute. Technology is great because technology is making this conversation happen. It's made this show happen. I mean, we're talking about the internet being in its infancy still, and like the show's 11 years old. So you've been investing for 20 years on the front side of that. So just talk about how technology has changed in the course of your, I don't want to say your time. I don't want to make you feel old, but you just had a birthday, so maybe you do.
Yeah. So, I love technology. People with, quadriplegic people are now going to be walking with exoskeletons. Crazy. Now, I don't believe in a brain transplant like Elon Musk does. That's, fucked up crap. But anyway, excuse my French.
No, it's good.
But, technology, so we have to be realistic, but we have to be also optimistic. And then we have to, find ways that we can optimize things. But technology is a blessing. People are, always complaining about the youth on their smartphones, not going out too much. That's not true. They go when they can and they when they want. We're living in different times. Let them, right? If they want to spend time on their iPads and iPhones or smartphones, let them, right? We cannot bitch about the youth, about using technology. Was it wrong for the youth to gather around the radio, analog radio, 60 years ago? No, right? Or to TV. So anyway, we have to move on. Technology is a blessing. We are living longer lives, healthier lives, and we are only going to improve. So technology is a blessing. You will never hear me a bitch about, excuse my friend, about technology. Now, I believe in a lot of stuff that a lot of people may not believe in today. Like I'm talking about orbital rings. That's crazy, right? But 100 years ago, they thought, we have the steam engine, we have the internal combustion engine, and this is it. This is the end of it. There will not be any more amazing technologies. That's what they thought 100 years ago, even before the airplane, air flight. So we are limited by our own thoughts. That's our only, imprisonment. But technology will make things happen, right? And we cannot say today what's the limitation. So, of course, there are some limitations between technology and physics and technology and application, right? For example, autonomous driving. Elon Musk is saying, okay, we need to have autonomous driving. Why? And they keep on hammering why? Because they will save 35,000 deaths that are caused by car crashes. Wait a second. That's great that you want to do that. That's very altruistic, you know, which you have to be careful about, of course. But, man, okay, you may prevent a few thousand deaths from those 35,000, but how many new forms of death will come from autonomous driving? Right? So, yes, we have to be careful with technology, but, you know, it's one of our most amazing tools for civilization.
So, oh, geez, Pete, I looked down. I've still got to do this one. Shifting Gears brought to you by evergreenpodcasts.com. Shifting Gears brought to you by evergreenpodcasts.com. Okay, we've mentioned Elon a few times. Have you ever crossed paths with him? Have you ever met him?
No, no. But, you know, I'm going to tell you something that I don't tell often. In 1999, everybody knew my company, Internet Hypergate, satellite broadband. We advertised everywhere. We were everywhere. Everyone in Silicon Valley knew about us. So Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, everybody knew about our company. We were the first about satellite broadband internet before it was a real technology, which was the reason why we didn't succeed in it or proceeded with it. It was 1999. And then in 2000, of course, we had the huge crash, right?
Yeah.
But satellite broadband, for example, Elon Musk, thank you very much. We're going to be entering that market again. We are the original pioneers behind it. But anyway, talking about Elon Musk, no, I haven't met him, but they have met me, my name most likely. And that's not today or yesterday. It was 23 years ago that they knew about me. And, you know, okay, yeah, what about it? Jim?
I'm just fascinated by you guys that talk about space. You, Elon, Richard Branson, Jeff Bezos. I mean, there's so many of you.
Yeah.
I mean, the cookie cutter is kind of the same for you guys, but not really.
Yeah, you know, so what we differ in is they are saying they are doing this because of this and that. And we are saying, okay, we are in it because of a few main reasons. But the most important reason is it's going to make our company a multi-trillion dollar company. You know, so that's the most driving force. It's not altruism. It's not my desire to be an amazing space person or, you know, among the space billionaires. I don't give a shit about that. The thing is, with bringing heavy industry, not tomorrow, not in a few years, but in 15 years onward, when we have the infrastructure in place, you can have unlimited transportation of humans and cargo back and forth from Earth to the moon. Now, that is going to be huge. And we are going to do it step by step. With rockets, and this, you know, when you follow me on Twitter, you'll see that I do analysis sometimes. I do threats. One of the threats is about, you know, the bullshit of the rocket industry. They are saying in 30 years, blah, 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 rockets and so on. And that's not going to happen. Rockets are the most dangerous mode of transportation ever invented. So if you are deluded about, and I'm talking about the big guys, right? Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, ULA, including NASA. If you think that humanity will be interplanetary species because of rockets, you are deluded.
I'll give you the prime example, and you're going to laugh. I hope you laugh at this. Okay. I remember as a little boy watching the Roadrunner and the Coyote, and the Coyote bought these rockets from Acme all the time, and either blow it up in his face or ship them off somewhere he didn't want to be. Oh, wait. You're talking real life. Yeah. I'm talking about a cartoon. I am so sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But it's true. Rockets are dangerous. They are explosives, right? They are controlled explosions, right? And, of course, we're getting better in it. But the likelihood of Jeff Bezos dying on his own rocket was 1 in 1,000. While the likelihood of you dying on an airplane is between 1 in 1 million and 1 in 1 billion, most likely, right? So it's very cute now and then, but when people start dying on your freaking rocket, what's going to happen, you think?
It's not going to be good.
The whole industry will be scrapped. It's not going to be good. Investors will walk out. We are now seeing the effects of global warming. We have cancellations of launches. We have cancellations of even fueling, right? Which we had just this week, just a few days ago, even yesterday. Cancellation. You know how much money that costs? So no private enterprise will be able to keep on doing that kind of crap. Their investors will walk out. That's why you need freaking space planes. That's why you need orbital infrastructure. And from that orbital infrastructure, we launch spaceships. But it's from orbit to orbit, not from surface to surface. And that you can see in the orbital infrastructure part of our website.
Oh, man. So, okay. So you have to come back on. I know you don't do a lot of media, but you have to come back on because we barely scratched the surface. I still have a full page of notes over here.
My pleasure. It would be my pleasure.
Okay. So we have a little fun question we normally ask guests at the end of the show here. And I'm going to ask you, and the guy that posed it originally is probably going to cringe because he's like, there's so much more stuff you should ask him, but I just got to ask you. Okay. You're kind of off schedule, right? Because you told me you're up late anyway, so breakfast probably isn't your thing, but I'm sure you have that first meal of the day whenever you get up. So what is it?
Yeah.
What do you have for breakfast, my man?
So I almost always go out for food because I'm a terrible cook. I don't have a girlfriend who takes care of me at the moment. So I'm too lazy to make my own food. But I go out for food, and I have, normal breakfast, eggs, and that's about it. If I have breakfast, and if I go out for breakfast,
I was gonna say
just normal breakfast.
Oh, we were hoping for something exciting, I'm sure.
No, I'm not that excited.
Because you told me about your brother. We got to get to that. We've got some team members' stories that we wanted to get to. And like I said, we've got like a minute and a half left, which is just not enough time to get into the end of that.
Yeah. But what I want to tell your audience is something funny and beautiful. One of my brothers in the team before his passing was Rutger Hauer, Roy Batty, this a cyborg from Blade Runner. And I'm going to give you guys a link to my blog that I posted, I think 13, 14 years ago, where he answers me the question about his beautiful death dialogue, monologue from Blade Runner. I'm going to give you that, guys.
Okay, we'll get it, and I'll make sure I get it part of the show notes for everybody else that isn't here live, which, unfortunately, people,
No problem.
Neil, like I said, we've got to get you back. There's so much to talk to you about, so I appreciate the time. And go get some sleep.
Yeah, thank you.
Or whatever you're going to do.
Thank you, Jim.
Have a good night, my friend.
Thank you. You too.
So there we go. And, that was just, I'm still, like I said, I've still got a page of notes over here of stuff that I kind of scribbled down as you guys were popping questions up in the chat room on the Duck Pond. And I had a page, a big chunk of notes of my own that we didn't even get into. So, and he's just a wealth of information, and there's more coming in the chat room, and oh boy. So, like I said, we're just having a good time here tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did, because that was... wow, that was phenomenal. And we'll be back next week, and we'll be talking about who knows what next week, but tonight with space.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a good show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Take a few moments, subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. You know how to do it. I don't have to tell you. Just be ready for next week. It'll be sooner than you think.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcasts.